You're listening to Marketing and Mocktails with Manal Sampat, a previously recorded Facebook Live episode inside the group Marketing and Mocktails with Manal, where dental professionals discuss, share, and learn about dental marketing. Manal Sampat is an entrepreneur, speaker, healthcare provider, and enthusiastic shoe lover. She's been featured in the Huffington Post, Dentistry IQ, Forbes, the Guinness Book of World Records, and more. Join her as she discusses marketing, team, business growth, with other industry experts. And if you'd like to receive 10 ways to improve your marketing today, simply text the word resources to 38470.
Can I call you MJ? Is that okay?
MJ, yes. Is perfectly fine. Thanks.
MJ, Manal. Welcome MJ to the show. And you know what? I wanted to talk about this with you because MJ posted something really amazing yesterday where, you know, she talked about, well, how do we even get ourselves to work out this crisis right now? The whole world is in a crisis, especially in America, we're in a crisis. But the interesting thing is that the dental community, we are almost in a dangerous area of this crisis, right? Like we are putting ourselves out there all the time and we're in this dangerous area. So before I go into the whole, what do we know, what we should be doing in dentistry, you know, MJ, you have had wonderful, you've been practicing for a while, and I know that you remember from the 1980s when they had the first HIV outbreak, right? And how it changed dentistry and how things were being done. And now I know that you are the Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs at Tufts University. And Tufts is now, the dental school at Tufts is closed down.
We just made the decision last week to close
down. And you just made the decision last week. And, you know, there is so much going on. And how do you even come up with a decision like that? How do you allow your mind to accept what is happening, deal with it in a calm way? Because that's so important. Right now we have information overload. Everybody has opinions. You should be doing this. You should be doing that. We should close down. We should not close down. You're right. There is so much going on. Give us some of your tips and strategies here.
So, you know, obviously I didn't make this decision by myself. We have a whole team that worked collaboratively, you know, 24 hours a day for the last 7 or 8 days to get to this place. And we did a ton of research and we shared information across boards and we had some great fact finding by our colleagues at the University of Washington. And they shared with all of the ADEA, which is the American Dental Education Association group, what their plan was to move forward. And they were the first to close their school. I don't know if we were second, but we were close behind them making that decision. And I think that really what it came down to is making sure that the priority has to be safety. I mean, we talk about that all the time with our patients, and that's why we follow strict infection control protocols. So if safety is our number one focus, then we have to be choosing what's the best practice for us, for our patients, our staff, our resident students, and faculty. And what it came down to is the research is showing us that, you know, quite honestly, it's really not safe. There's several different varieties of the COVID-19. One is you can walk around and not even know you're infected. The other is got stomach issues and it can last less than 24 hours. Some people are having a fever that lasts maybe 5 minutes and then it's gone. So we don't know why that's happening to different people, but some people, I guess, are more able to fight this infection than others. But then there's others that get very sick. And, you know, we've seen students get really sick. We've seen healthy adults get really sick and die. We've seen elderly people who are medically compromised die. And we have to minimize that somehow. And the best way for us to do it, especially since our patient population is more on the older side, is for us to not allow them to come in, to keep them safe.
Right, to keep them safe. And I understand that. And, you know, it's such a hard decision for us to make because we are also in a position where we say, well, do we go ahead and close down a small business? Because so many dental practices are small businesses. And they have payroll.
It's really hard.
It's a very tough decision. And I know we have viewers joining in. Rhonda, hello. Berto from Brazil. Hi, guys. Thank you for being here. Tanya, Robin, thank you for joining. I see we have a lot more viewers coming in. If you are here, tell us who you are, where you are from, and let's get into a discussion. You know, tell us what's happening in your state. How are your dental practices reacting to this? What are your opinions and feelings about this? Because we do have to, as a industry and as a community, we have to really make things work for us right now. And that's the hard part on how do we decide this? How do we make a decision? You know, and we have Dr. MJ Hanlon here who's sharing some of those tips and strategies with us. But what are some of the things that we can look for information-wise? Because right now there is an information overload, like I mentioned earlier, where we have some channel saying some stuff, some experts saying some stuff from a clinical perspective and from a perspective of making things better for our community and for our nation. You know, how did you guys decide on this, on the decision, and where did you look for the information?
So basically we use the CDC as our guidance. Basically they're making the best decisions as far as what it is, you know, what we're dealing with, you know, how we can affect it, what the symptoms are, how we can prevent them, what we should do if somebody has been sick or has traveled to a level 3 country. You know, starting out with those questions and making sure that you're screening your patients before they come in. If they have gone to any of these level 3 countries, you should make sure that they've quarantined 2 weeks before they enter your practice. If they are sick, they should absolutely positively stay home. They should not be coming out at all, because you don't know what you have. And unfortunately, we don't have the tests available. I know that the Trump administration is starting to make those tests more readily available. And I'm sure we'll see that testing will increase over time. But what I'm thinking that we're going to see is that now with improved testing and more testing, we're going to really find out there's much more people infected than we realize.
Well, and you know, as of today, we have over 3,000 cases.
Right.
And
in the United States, right?
In the United States only. United States only. And here's my concern. You know, my husband is a physician, like I mentioned, and he's working at the hospital. I am very good friends with a lot of infectious disease MDs, people who are in this, who are in the trenches, who are trying to tell us what's going on with the virus, what to look out for. And it's way more people. There are, because the issue with this virus, and everybody keeps comparing. Well, what do you think about this comparison with the flu? Flu kills more people, flu this and this and this. Tell us about that.
So, you know, I was in denial like everybody else, because that's one of the processes we go through when we hear about a crisis, is we kind of deny it. We deny the information. And I was in denial about it myself. In fact, I posted on my LinkedIn account at one point, okay, people, just wash your hands. We have been, you know, as dentists and leaders in the healthcare industry, we have been telling people to wash their hands for forever, right? So is medicine. People are finally getting they should wash their hands. I mean, I don't understand why that's such rocket science, but they finally are realizing they need to wash their hands. Not touch your face, not touch your nose. You know, when you sneeze, cover it. When you cough, cover your mouth. You know, all of those sorts of things.
Not your hands, in your elbow.
In your elbow. And now shake hands with your elbows, or do the fist pump or something, whatever, you know, whatever you choose to do. But
namaste. I just go back to namaste.
Namaste. All right. There you go.
6 feet distance, the namaste.
But there's so many things that we, you know, that a common practice for us as dentists, that people are just realizing, oh my gosh, this can help stop these things. And I think that message needs to get across. I think education is the number one thing that we needed to do as an organization, as Tufts, in order to make the right decisions and head in the right direction. Is, you know, we needed to get it as educated as possible. So to go back to your original question, the CDC is a great resource. Who is a great resource? I have found Johns Hopkins information graphic that, you know, shows all of the cases globally, is outstanding to look at. You know, the first day I looked at it last week, there was 122,000 cases globally. It's now up to almost 165,000. So, you know, to me, that's a huge amount of increase in a very short amount of time. So we know this is just going to get worse. And, you know, when the WHO made the decision to call it a pandemic, there was a reason behind that. That's because it is such a contagious disease. You know, we know the facts are that it's going to get really bad. And the only way to do that, and I guess the key buzzword is flatten the curve, which means to take the bell curve and flatten it out a little bit. The only way to do that is to social distance, you know, try to contain yourself, you know, impose self-restrictions on yourself so that you don't affect others. And then mitigating it by, you know, doing things like slowing, you know, closing your practice, possibly if that's a decision you want to make. Obviously, we can't make that decision for you. But my recommendation is if we are doing anything with aerosols on any patients, the problem is that if we don't know they're infected, we could be infecting ourselves, not only ourselves, our staff, but other patients that are in the office. And the key thing too, Manal, with this virus is it can last on dry surfaces. So let's just say, you know, you have an aerosol droplet in the air and there's a virus in that. It can last on dry surfaces for 72 hours. So, you know, if you've wiped down a surface, but then something falls on it and it still can live. And we don't know why that is, but they have mutated enough so that they can live even on dry surfaces.
Well, you know, the interesting part about this is because I did, like I said, I did reach out to a friend of mine who is an infectious disease physician. And yeah. I mean, the life she is living right now, right? I had to reach out and I'm like, are you taking care of yourself? Are you taking a moment to break? And she's like, no, this is so crazy. And people often forget about the medical community who's dealing with this. We get so fascinated in our own world and trying to buy toilet paper that we are not going and thinking about the actual physicians, the professionals who are helping control this, right? And this is my issue with it. So I asked her and I said, is this like the flu? And she said, it's not like the flu. There is no vaccine. There is no approved antiviral treatment. And the fatality rate is even higher. And she's telling me that it is scary to watch my patients get intubated and have very little to offer them. I'm afraid we are going to run out of ICU beds and ventilators.
That's absolutely the case. There was a great paper on the Johns Hopkins site indicating that the amount of beds needed is something like 214 million in ICU units worldwide. So, I mean, it's crazy and we don't even have half of that. We don't even have a third of that. So,
on top of that, I'm worried about the physicians themselves. Like, again, my husband is a physician at the hospital and he's dealing with this, but, you know, there were two emergency physicians in the medical community who are in critical conditions right now because of this.
Right.
And we are not thinking about them.
Nope. And you know what stress can do to our bodies? We know what it can do to our immune response to things. So when you're working 24/7 because of a crisis like this, you know, you have a huge, huge possibility of being infected because you don't have the resistance to fight it off.
Well, you know,
we have to care for them.
We have to care for them, but we also have to care. So like we had a positive case in my town a few weeks back. And even though my husband was not in direct contact, I was supposed to fly that same week to Florida to present at a conference. And I was supposed to fly on Wednesday and I called them on Monday evening and I said, listen, not direct contact, but we do have a case. My husband's a physician. He lives with me. We do like each other. You know, we do like each other. And I'm going to tell you that if there's any, even a small chance that he was exposed or I'm exposed, I'm not sitting on that plane. So I apologize, but I will not be flying to Florida. I will not take that risk of putting others, or imagine going to Florida in a conference full of healthcare professionals and presenting. And if I even had the possibility. So I self-quarantined myself.
You know what, Manal, that is really admirable because you did something that was really hard to do. And this, you know, great leadership calls for making the tough decisions. And I think making the decision not to go, making the decision not to keep your practice open, it just makes sense because, you know, the writing is on the wall. I do believe that the federal government is gearing up to shut down businesses totally for 2 to 3 weeks at a minimum, because I just based on the research I've done and what has happened in China, the only way to combat it and to decrease the impact this is going to have is to put everybody in place and just stop.
Absolutely. And even in Italy, now people have to choose who to save.
I know. And I think, unfortunately, that's going to head in our direction.
I think so too. I completely agree with you that I think in the next couple of weeks, if not sooner, we are going to get some announcement coming in that all businesses have to shut down. We already have restaurants in different parts of the country asking to be shut down, only drive-through available, no more bars, no more gatherings. Now, we do have a question here from Jeff, and he says, any comment in the New York Times article about the high level of risk for dentists dental hygienists, dental assistant, and oral surgeons. Are dental right. offices prepared with the current infection control regimens? What do you have to say for that?
So we are as prepared as we can be. We don't have anything that can protect us any further from this virus. So, you know, if you're going to see patients on an emergency basis, my suggestion would be, not that you might be able to find them right now, but if you can, N95 masks are a filtered mask that helps to prevent most. Research has been done that it does not prevent the coronavirus from getting in. So it's not 100% protection for you. I think that the other thing you can do is there's a company called Surgically Clean Air that offers an in-office HEPA, I think it's a HEPA filter. It's an air filter that filters out all these very, very small particles. And I would, if you're going to stay open, we're actually using one of those in our emergency bays to make sure that we keep the air clean. Air rotation, I guess, has to be refreshing the entire air in your operatory 6 times an hour. So I don't know what that's called specifically, you know, from an engineering standpoint, but the air exchange needs to be around 6 times per hour for it to be effective.
So in a way, we are putting ourselves in danger.
We are. If we continue to make that decision to stay open, and I certainly understand it from a financial and from a supporting the staff perspective, if we make that decision to stay open, it's going to have ramifications for all of us.
I know you were saying it's going to have ramifications, and somebody, because specifically they asked about the New York Times article in that, let's break this down in different categories, right? We know this is here. We understand that this is the current situation. And I also understand that while we can contain the virus, the containment, we can flatten the curve as the trend is, right? We can flatten the curve by, you know, self-quarantining, make sure that we have social distancing and all that. That still doesn't mean the virus is going to go away. It just means that we are still going to be diagnosing people, but we are actually controlling the infection, and we are making sure that we are not in public spaces where there is a lot more people and the medical facilities are overburdened with all of this, right? So let's break this down from a dental practitioner's point of view, all right? So let's say you're a dental practice owner, a business owner. The first thing I need to, you know, we need to go into is in the mental state in a crisis. Because there are certain ways for us to first be mentally prepared so we can logically think and prepare. Now, what are your thoughts on that? You know, making sure that we're in the right mindset to handle something like this.
So I think it's key as leaders of our community and our practice that we have to go through a bunch of different things. First, we have to research and we have to know what the details are. And you can get that through the ADA, through your local dental societies, CDC, and WHO, and all the other places that I mentioned earlier. That's the first thing. So do your research, know what it is, you know how it's affecting people, and know what you need to do. Secondly, I would take a deep breath and communicate with your staff. The key here is first education, then communication. You have to have a communication portal for your staff and showing them that you're supporting them and that you're supporting, you know, that you understand that this might be a hardship, but it's going to be a hardship for everyone. We're all in this together. And I think that's the key, is we're all in this together. Then we have to, you know, educate the patients. And what is your team going to do for its patients? Are the patients going to be treated, you know, in an emergency basis? Are you making the decision not to treat at all? One way we can support our local hospitals is to let the emergency room know at the local hospitals, look, I'm willing to support emergency dental care during this time. If you have any, please feel free to refer them to my office. Now, I would caution you, though, also that you should make sure that you ask those same questions. Have they traveled? Have they been sick? If they have been sick, you might want to think twice about seeing them. And, you know, if there's some things that can be done palliatively, like giving antibiotics, then that might be the best course of action for everybody. But if it's a broken tooth and it's sharp, then, you know, you're going to have to, you know, smooth it down and do the usual emergent type treatment. I was just going to say, would I make a crown prep, do a crown prep now? No, probably not.
That's important to know, right? Because some of the stuff that I have for emergency care protocol here are obviously you want to make sure you want to ask them the same health examination. You know, how are you feeling? Have you been traveling outside of the country? Is it necessary for you to come? Is this an elective treatment or is this an emergency treatment? What is going on? Do you have a fever? Making sure that they are healthy enough to come into the practice. Another key point that I heard somewhere too is asking patients to wait in their cars and not in the waiting room.
If they are sick. Absolutely.
Or even if they are not, just wait in your car and come in. So you're just not in a space with
What you're saying. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so instead of you coming in at, if your appointment's at 10:30 and you walk in at 10 a.m. to sit down for half an hour, stay in your car and then come in at 10:25 so that we know that that's happening. Clearly, from a dental practitioner's point of view, practices as well, we are keeping very clean. We always have. We have to follow standard of precaution. But another thing is, you know, I also keep hearing about that we may be doing a pre-rinse.
Yes.
Because the ADA came out and said that, you know, have them do a pre-rinse. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Paradex is for about 20 seconds, swish and spit it out. Absolutely. Pre-rinse before you even see, because it just decreases the bacterial load. And, you know, whether or not it's effective against the virus, you know, remains to be seen. But, you know, it's probably not. But at least it decreases the loads in the saliva for that amount of time.
And you know, so I've had people, let's do the pre-rinse. We are not going to be doing a Cavitron from a hygienist point of view. We're not going to be doing a Cavitron. We're not going to be doing Prophy paste and, you know, the whole thing, which is going to create those aerosols. So we are not doing that. And, you know, keeping it an emergency point of view makes so much sense because you understand that your patients need it because they're in an emergency. That's the whole point of an emergency. And I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of slack about this because I'm going to say this out loud now because I'm thinking it from the dental community and I'm a hygienist. Okay, I'm going to say it. I'm going to go for it because I know I'm going to get negative feedback, but I have to say it. You know what, guys? If the patient is healthy and they're scheduled for their 6-month recare, it's okay if they wait a couple of months.
Absolutely.
It's okay.
Really? In the big scheme of things right now, you know, I think that the bottom line is, and I am so conscious because of 22 years being a private practice owner, I am so well aware of the financial impact that this is going to have. But at the same time, we have to make the best decision for everyone. And the best decision is not to create any more opportunities where this virus can spread. And by creating aerosols, we're actually creating more opportunities. So I think that it's just better for us to make that decision. But everyone has to do it for themselves. And until they're mandated to do it, I know there's going to be still a lot of people that will stay open. And I totally get it. And, you know.
And, you know, and that breaks down to who's going to mandate to do it. It has to be the government, right? I mean, the ADA, like we said, the ADA is not going to be necessarily somebody who comes out and they can come out and make a decision. Can they make a decision like that?
I don't think they can. I think that all politics is local. And I think that depending upon the local environment. So, you know, having a state of emergency declared in Massachusetts this week does make it a little bit easier for the governor to make, you know, changes and get things moving in the right direction as far as maybe doing some kind of bill to help financially, you know, small businesses survive. You know, we have to think about our staff. And, you know, our staff, if they're not working, if we're not working and our butts aren't in the chair, we're not bringing any revenue in. And it's very different, you know, for our profession versus a lot of other professions. You know, when you work for a company, the company will still pay you no matter what. You have benefits. You know, you don't have to worry so much about the health side of things. But in a private practice, you do, and you don't have all those luxuries of being able to pay for everything carte blanche for forever.
It's scary times for everybody, you know, the owner itself, but also the people who are working. And it's not just dentistry. This is affecting everyone. I don't even want to tell you how much money I lost. I'm just like, you know what? And again, I have lived through hurricanes and I've lived through natural disasters where I always had this habit. But, you know, we do have a question here. And Jeff is saying that on March 14, 2020, so yesterday, Ohio governor, you know, requested that dentists postpone elective surgeries. Should Massachusetts dentists be following Ohio's lead to minimize risk of dental personal, reduce the pace of spread of, you know, COVID-19 throughout the community and help those in our surrounding community and the rest of the country.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, yes. That's a simple thing. You know, hopefully people are following Ohio's footsteps on this. And once again, I'm sure we have many people watching here who are going to have opposite views and say, this is too crazy. You guys are taking this too drastically. Or I had a couple of people say, well, we have had no cases in our county. So I'm going to tell you something. I know we don't have any cases. If you don't have cases in your county, this is being spread. It's not as if you're to wait for somebody in the county. We, you know, some of the cases we have, people have been to concerts in another state. They have already taken flights. Just earlier this week, there was somebody who was being pretty much tested to see if they are going to be positive for a virus, decided to take a flight from New York to Florida. Mid-flight, finds out that they are positive. There were 144 people in that flight. Those are the people that require us to quarantine ourselves.
Yeah, yep.
And
so the ripple effect that has is substantial, because those 140 people, now it's going to negatively impact them, because they're going to have to get away from their families and distance themselves from their entire family until they're out of the woods.
Yep. And, you know, I'm getting comments from people here because this is being shared in multiple groups, guys. So if you want to share this in multiple groups, feel free to do that. We actually have somebody here, slam the curve. She said, no more opportunities for the virus to spread. Yes. You know, and then people are saying it's all going to unfold this week. I do believe this is all going to.
I do believe that too.
I do think that things are changing every hour. Things, more and more things are coming in every hour. And a part of this, again, comes down to mindset. How do we prepare for this, MJ? How do we know this is here. We, you know, the possibility is things are going to be closed down. And if things don't close down, it's going to be forced to close down, because you're going to have no patience. They're already telling people to not leave their homes. So if you don't have patience, that alone.
You got to research, you got to educate yourself, you got to make sure that you listen, because denial is one of the biggest things mentally that we do in a crisis. It can't be that bad. You know, an earthquake happened and, oh, it just affected so-and-so down the street. And then 5 minutes later, you know, you get an epicenter blowing up and your building comes down and you forgot, you ignored the police to get out of the building. So, you know, you don't want to make decisions like that. You want to be prepared ahead of time. And I think by listening as much as you can, seeing where it's going in the news, watching the path that is taken with other countries, helps to educate us. And just based on the research that we've done in the last week, I've seen what happened in China. I know that it can be at least minimized by shutting everything down and just getting in with your family, staying close, staying home, cooking your meals at home, no real interaction will thwart it and at least minimize it. And quite honestly, you know, the longer we as dental practices stay open, some of the supplies, because I don't know how much you know about the supply chain, how big the effect has had. We can't get, you know, we're on allotments for masks, yes. We're on allotments for gowns, we're on allotments for everything that has to do with PPE. So if we take it, then the hospitals may not have it to treat the patients that they're treating that are really sick.
And they're already on low supplies.
They are.
This is not fake news. They are already on low supplies. Like I mentioned, I firsthand have family members in this, and they're already on low supplies, and they are genuinely concerned. We do have a question. We have a couple of questions here that I'm going to read out from other groups. You know, Dr. Cassell says, would you fly out to a small conference in your good health, but you're over 60? Paul, you know, again, we can't make the decision for you if you should be flying out. The best thing I'm going to do for you is, like I mentioned, I did have an infectious disease MD that I reached out to earlier, and I asked her some of this question, so we are, you know, I could give you some of the answers we have coming in. And when talking to her, her exact things were, here it is, she said, if you're sick, she said, it sucks to miss a birthday or a wedding or a conference. I know it sucks a lot more when someone you love ends up intubated, right. Social right. distances, it really does help. It's not alarmist. I would avoid any air travel or international travel. Avoid mass transit if you can. Work from home if you can. Avoid Avoid routine and unnecessary doctor's visits. Limit hospital visitors. Wash your hands more than you think you need to do. We need more tests. We need more drive-through testing capabilities, faster turnaround times. People in the medical community are genuinely concerned with the amount of beds they are going to have, with the amount of tests they are going to have, with the amount of ventilators they are going to present. So if you don't have to go, Paul, again, it's a decision that you're going to have to make, so we can't make that for you. But flatten the curve. Flatten the curve is what I'm
saying. The other thing, Manal, we should talk about is reporting cases. So if we do have cases that do come in, we do have an obligation to report them to the DPH. And I don't know if we also report them to the CDC. That's one piece of information. I know that I have to report directly to the DPH. And I would assume that that's where we all send our cases and report there. But the CDC does have a reporting mechanism, and it's online. And I'll include that link in a piece I will put on my Facebook page.
Please do. Thank you. And we do have Dr. Kellogg here, and she says, patients with diabetes and cardiovascular disease will be healthier and lower risk if we lower their inflammatory burden by having the hygiene appointment.
Ah, good point. But I'm not sure it's worth the risk.
Right. So she said there is risk either way. Should we encourage these patients to keep their recare appointment?
My guess is we're going to be all shut down, and I don't think that that's going to be an issue within the next week. That's my sense. That's my personal opinion, not anything that I know for sure. It is my personal opinion, but I think that we're all going to see a drastic change as this week ramps up.
I do so too. And I, Dr. Kellogg, I do understand you're saying that we do have people who need that care. Again, we're going to have to, as healthcare professionals, figure out which risk is higher. No matter what, there's a risk.
Right. And so the messaging could be that you reach out to those patients, and especially the patients that are immunocompromised, have lung disease or diabetes, or what was the other one? Heart disease, lung, diabetes, or older adults, anybody over, well, when they say 60, that kind of gives me the willies, but whatever. Anybody that's in those brackets, send them more details about what they can do during this time of uncertainty, by brushing their teeth, flossing their teeth, doing everything they possibly can to keep their mouths healthy, is going to help to mitigate some of the risk by not being treated right away.
Right. So we all, we have to find alternative ways to be present for so many of our patients. And we also have to be able to ethically provide our duty, because, we are ethical healthcare providers, so we can't take these things lightly. And again, it comes down, nobody can tell you what to do in this case. It always comes down to your decision-making. But again, figuring out which risk is higher than the other is the most important. We do have a question here from Lauren. Lauren says, I agree with holding off on elective procedures to flatten the curve. What is the rationale for offices still providing elective dental services when it is known that we don't have proper PPE for many dental procedures? Lauren, I don't know if we know that it's known. I know there's a journal article circling around that is saying that dental professionals do not have the required PPE for this virus. I believe that there's a petition going on to send that article to the ADA so we can get a confirmation on what is going on there. Do you have other opinions on that, MJ? Have you heard anything else?
No, I haven't heard anything else specific to that, Monal. No,
yeah, so we haven't heard anything specific to that, but hopefully if that is true, and if we do not have that and that is not protecting us, then I do hope that healthcare professionals will make a decision for the community as a whole instead of selfish decisions. That's going to be something that we do it. I believe Dr. Paul Goodman is trying to reach out to the ADA today with the journal link. If you go to Dr. Paul Goodman's Facebook page, his Facebook group, Dental Nachos, or if you go out to his Instagram in his profile, he does have the journal article linked there. And again, I haven't had the opportunity to read the whole article, so I don't know where we stand on that. But the bottom line is, if something comes out and says you are not protected, then you are not protected.
So the one thing I do know, Manal, is that face masks come in three levels, level one, level two, level three. Level one is the lowest. It doesn't protect you nearly at all. It's something that you might wear in a, you know, working on Typodonts in schools, right? We've changed to level one masks in our preclinical area just so that we can save on our level three masks. Level three masks definitely do not have, the pore size is too big to contain any viruses. And like I said earlier, the N95 respirator masks still are not protective enough. There's two articles that indicate that, you know, these viruses, how small they are, will get through and it's not going to protect you. So I think that, you know, in the big scheme of things, we're really not protected as professionals. And so if we're not protected, then the likelihood of us, you know, over time being exposed to it is pretty big, the longer that we go.
And that's the other thing too. I think there are more articles and studies coming out now, which are talking about that there is a long-term effect.
Right.
You know, again, this is all so very
new. That's why they call it novel.
You know, this is so very new. So I know that everybody wants, like, we have some comments coming in and saying, well, how do you know exactly? Like, there are people infected with no signs of disease. Yes, Dr. Santos, there are people because the disease does not show itself. You know, it could be as little as 3 days or as more as 14 or more days. Some people just go through it without even knowing they had it.
Right.
Because their immune system's stronger and they simply don't know. They went through it, but because they didn't know, they could be traveling, they could be with other people. And for example, I had to make, like I mentioned, a very hard decision to call a conference 2 days before I was, 48 hours before I was flying, and say, I'm not. And this was before the world broke loose. This was when things were slowly coming in, you know? And even at that point, it was a decision I had to make and say, well, what can I live with? Can I live with, right. Even if I feel healthy, how do I know I'm not going to be sitting next to a 60-year-old plus or somebody who's immunosuppressant, right? So, you know, at the end of the day, when I take a look at so many of these things, and I'm going to do these talks every day, I'm going to try and bring in more and more people every day where we are discussing this, because it's something that needs to happen. And we need to hear from leaders like Dr. MJ Hanlon, who is not only talking this, she's walking the talk. You know, she's talking about it. They just had to make very tough decisions last week for Tufts, and she's also the incoming president for the Massachusetts Dental Society. So we did, you know, we do have that. Oh, we do have somebody asking level three mask. Question, level three for mask, is that what they're recommending for us to have?
Yes, level three. Yes, level three. So if you don't have level three mask, it's really not safe for you. Level three is the highest that we have so far, and the N95 is next up. And those ventilator respirator masks do not really help and protect you. They're not
100%. So that's another concern as well. Well, you know, Dr. MJ, you do help because you have been through the whole HIV, you know, tell us a little bit about that era. How did the dental community come together at that point in time, and how did that affect our industry?
So I think, you know, and we're going to see that this is going to start creating some more, you know, guidance on how we move in our lives forward from this, because I think this pandemic really caught us all off guard. And I think that we're going to see more people talking about washing your hands, covering your face, you know, wiping down their tray tables. I never really got into that myself personally, but I see now where it's not just about me, it's about the next person or the previous person, and how you can ensure their health and safety by just doing a little bit yourself every time. I think that you know, overall, we just all have to agree that you know, this is something that is so extraordinary. That, you know, if we guide ourselves on the principles that we started with the AIDS epidemic and realize that we have to treat everyone as if they are infected and take all the necessary precautions for every single patient, then we will get to where we need to be.
And, you know, that's, again, opposite point of view, right? Because we do have people on the thread and saying, well, we are treating every single patient. We're always treating our practices with every single patient as being infectious. So how is this different? How is this any different, right? And that's what they are trying to navigate.
So it's different because it's more contagious, number one. And number two, we really don't have the level of masks created to fight things that are that small, to fight a virus that's that small. And so all those things coupled together is what's impacting us.
And, you know, again, what going back to the medical community, who we often tend to forget, the more supplies we hoard, and I mean not toilet paper, I'm not talking about toilet paper, I'm talking about masks and gloves and glasses and all the things that we are required, that means they don't have them.
Right.
And remember, a hospital is not just for people with coronavirus. A hospital is for people who are fighting many, many different kinds of diseases. We are talking about people, you know, who absolutely need it. And if we don't have, I just want you to think about that. If we don't have enough hospital beds, if we don't put them in, if we run out of enough ventilators, if we run out of enough healthy physicians, where does that put that as a country?
Right.
We become similar to Italy, what they are doing right now. So maybe they have to choose.
The plan, most hospitals, and I don't know if you know this, Manal, yeah, and maybe I'm sure that your hospitals in Washington have already started this, but any kind of elective appointments are being canceled because they need to start ramping up and get prepared for the influx of these patients. So if you can imagine how an emergency, you know, hospital works and how patients are coming in constantly from car accidents, from heart attacks, from just very serious illnesses, right? If you add on top of that a pandemic, which is going to get out of control, you're going to have patients in the hallways. You're going to have patients, you know, in rooms that were offices. I mean, you know, it's going to be a huge impact, huge.
And you know, I know we have questions coming in, guys. I'm going to ask those questions in just a minute. I got to go wash my hands now. But I just touched my face. So I'm going to excuse myself and do that real quick. But in the meantime, MJ, you know, when we talk about these things, what we do also need to understand is we also have the social responsibility to not go crazy, to not go take over the fear, right? Like, there, obviously, we want to be smart and logical about this and see how this is going to affect the mass majority, whether it's in our community, whether it's in our town, whether in our hospital, whatever it is. But we also need to make sure how we are going to, you know, if you go shopping, please don't buy packs and packs of TP. Please don't buy packs and packs of essentials. There are people who need them too. Right. And that is fear. That is something that comes down to fear. I do have a question. I have multiple questions here. So Dr. Paul, he says, my understanding that a level 4 mask such as the ones used in the hospital requires to be fitted. And there are OSHA requirements associated with it. I don't know much about it.
That is true. So it has to be air sealed across the forehead and around the face for it to work properly. And then, but the filters that they have built in, it's one on either side, the filters that they have built in can't filter out the level, the size of the particles. So that's why they're saying that they're still not going to protect you 100%.
100%, right? And then we do have another question coming on here. Dr. Julie, if we limit our practice activities to triage and emergencies, should we only utilize our younger, healthier team members? Our office has a majority of team members over 50 and 60 years old.
Okay, so that's a really great question. And here's some guidance that I gave my teams. So anybody that was immunocompromised, diabetic, heart disease, lung disease, they cannot be in the school. I told them flat out that they cannot be in the school. They need to stay home. In addition, if you are caring for elderly patients, you cannot continue to care for them if you keep working. So those are things to consider, especially our age group. You know, a lot of us are taking care of our parents. And if you are taking care of your parent, you should not be doing that and being exposed to the public. So you've got to minimize your footprint and stay away from anybody that might expose you, because then you could inadvertently expose them and you might not even know that you have. So team members are critically important. So if your team members are older than 60, the recommendation is that they not come in. And unfortunately, if that's the majority of your team, either you find temps to help you with the emergency visits, or you decide to close your office and let somebody else in the community triage the emergencies.
Awesome. We have Dr. Santos here asking, at the end of the day, let's say we close in the, okay, end of the day should close. How long should we close our practice is what pretty much somebody's asking.
So the rule of thumb today,
right is, now, during this hour,
right now, is the next 2 weeks at a minimum. That is going to put a huge effect already on flattening the curve. Now, the government may say to us, you know, let's do it for another 2 weeks after that. I don't know, but we have to just be vigilant and just pay attention to what the news is telling us. Pay attention to what's on the Department of Public Health site, wherever you're located, whatever state you're located in, and listen to government announcements. You know, your mayor, your governors are going to be coming on and they're going to be educating the public. I think part of the biggest problem is there's been a lack of consistency in the messaging, both from the federal government to the state governments. And I think that's where people, you know, when confusion ensues, that's where fear and panic start to happen, because they, you know, if they're getting conflicting messages, they don't know what to believe, right? Here you're trusting your leaders to, you know, lead you in the right direction. And they don't all know. And in fact, we're in a better position to understand the medical side of things than a lot of the politicians are, because they do not have a medical background. So I think the onus is on us as professionals to do all we can to learn everything we can about it. I've said that before, and I don't mean to reiterate myself, but that's, you know, basically that's what's going to alleviate fear. And then when you're trying to lead your team and you're creating a plan of what you're going to do, you know, do it in a step-by-step. Don't overwhelm them. You know, just do one thing at a time. Like, how are we going to communicate with the patients? What are we going to do with tomorrow's schedule? What are we going to do with cash flow when we're closed? You know, are there special projects that we can be working on while we're closed for a couple of days? You know, that's a time. So for example, you know, if it's just going to be me and one other staff member in my private practice, I'd have them start cleaning things and reorganizing things and doing things like that, that, you know, still work, but it keeps them busy and working and making them feel like they're contributing as well. So,
well, no, and I completely agree with you. I have had so many of practices reach out to me and say, hey, Manal, what do we do if we are going to be closing down? And remember, this is the time where all of those to-do lists that you never got to finish, right, and all of your team trainings, your, you know, for me, marketing trainings, all of that stuff, my schedule just got crazy booked because everybody's like, well, we're home.
And yeah, let's do it now. Yeah,
exactly. Now, right? So they're finishing all their to-do lists. So there are ways for us to adapt right now, because we may not have a choice then to adapt. No matter which way you are going, where you're asking one way of saying, hey, you know what? I don't believe in this. This is just a bunch of fluff and blah, 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 blah. And this is over proportion. This is media. And this is liberal talk, whatever you want to call it. And there could be the other side saying, listen, no, this is real. This is actually happening. No matter which one you believe in, we are living in this reality right now. We are. And unfortunately, we are going to have to follow some mandates coming through. We may be asked to close businesses. We may even be asked to close them for a longer time than we expect. You know, depending on how these things go and how these things climb and the amount of cases and the death tolls as they rise, where we are going to be, it's going to be different. So we do have to learn to adapt. Right. And, you know, MJ, what are some ways, so what did you, from your experience, what are some great ways to adapt? I know we talked about teledentistry or maybe virtual consults. What can we do so that we don't feel like we are not available for our patients? And while you answer that, I'm going to go quickly wash my hands because I touched my face. Excuse me as I do that. So please continue answering that question.
Okay. So I can't see your questions, but what I will do is teledentistry is definitely something that we wanted to head in that direction towards. And now we have the time to start figuring out how we can make that happen. And, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. So how do we make that happen for our educational institutions and for your own practices? Because, you know, if a patient calls you and you're able to triage them over the phone during certain call-in hours, just like physicians have, then you can eliminate the bogging down of appointments that you have on your practice, you know, and eliminate some of the unnecessary appointments. We all have those patients that call for every little thing. And it's so much better if you, you know, are able to keep your schedule open for those true emergencies, so that, you know, you're only seeing patients that you want to be seeing, that need to be seen, that have to have treatment done. So I think teledentistry definitely is on the works of one of those things that have been on our list, Manal, that we would love to see you know, to start to develop for our own practices. But I think, you know, individual practices should look at that maybe during this downtime and figure out what they can do and how they can do it. The one challenge that we have is there's very little guidance on teledentistry in the rules and regulations in most states. I know there's very little in Massachusetts that guides us on the teledentistry portion. But I think that now, you know, the pressure might be put on all of us to start coming up with some determinants for that.
Yeah. And, you know, we do. Thank you for that. And sorry, guys, I had to go wash my hands. So I have to do this, right? All right. So I know, Donna, you're asking, are they seeing only emergencies? Yeah, many practices are only seeing emergencies. That is happening there. Dr. Seth here is asking, I have patients ready for their crown insert. Should I see patients tomorrow and in coming days or leave them in temp crowns for next couple of months?
That's a tough one. You don't really have a lot of aerosols with crown inserts. So, you know, I might make the decision to just put a bunch of those appointments in one day and get them all done in one day. I think as long as you don't have to do any major changes and your crown goes in without any aerosol generation, I think it's safe enough to do. I wouldn't treat, obviously, a sick patient. I think that, you know, you really have to be clear with your staff on screening everyone. We are going to, Manal, something that practices may want to think about doing is we are going to get handheld temperature scanners. Oh. So that thermometers, so that everybody that does come in, staff, everybody has to have their temperature taken every single day so that we can have some guidance as to whether or not somebody might be getting sick. You know, elevated temperature definitely would be an indication that they're fighting something. It might be small, but we don't know the impact that the coronavirus has on some people. Like you said earlier, that, you know, that some people have no effect whatsoever, but they are still carrying the virus.
Yeah. And, you know, again, these are, unfortunately, nobody has the direct answer.
All the answers.
Right. All the answers. And nobody has one here's how you do it answer, because it's a novel virus. And that's what we are dealing with. And that's why there's so much uncertainty about it. Right. So making those decisions based on what can you do to limit any kind of exposure would be where I would say I would start, and controlling what we can control. Right. You know, would be a great start as well. We do have another question here. Specifically, Jeff says, specifically, should state dental organizations be proactive and petition the governors to mandate the closure of dental offices? That's a tough one.
So nobody can mandate. So, you know, I know that this is really tough for everybody here, but nobody can mandate you to do anything. You are an owner of private practice. Now, the federal government, based on what's best for everyone, can make that decision. But I believe that the states leave business decisions up to businesses. Now, if it's going to have an effect on our state, then they may come in and do that. We can only guide you as far as what we see and what's going on in the outside world. We can't mandate anybody to close their offices. So I think until the president makes a decision that all businesses close, that we won't still have any guidance on dental practices, what dental practices should be doing. I just will tell you that personally, just reading all the research, I know what has been happening out there and can see what happened with China. I know it's just a matter of time before, you know, it's best practice and onus on us to slow it down and flatten that curve.
And that's, you know, something that we all have to be very much aware of. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we feel that we are somehow, no matter what kind of tricky situation you have in life, right? For whatever reason, we all say, well, I'm going to be safe. Nothing's going to happen to me. It's all good until it happens. And then,
well, it's called denial, right? It's called denial.
It is called denial.
And it's one of those emotions that we feel right away when we hear something that we really aren't comfortable with, or we hear a message that we don't want to believe, is that we'll deny it. We'll pretend that it's not true. We have a tendency to hold on to our current beliefs and just ignore it. And then we start to get ourselves educated, and we start maybe turning our mind around. So that's what I've had to do. That's how I've turned around my thinking about this whole thing. You know, when I saw the statistics of the influenza versus the coronavirus early on, and, you know, 61,000 people died of the influenza virus in 17 and 18, the flu season, 2017-18, you know, and 45 million people were infected. That's a huge amount of people. You know, and I thought, well, this is nothing. This is a little drop in the bucket. But unfortunately, what I didn't understand is how contagious this is and how rapidly it's spreading. And it is going to affect us in a higher level, worse degree than any influenza before it.
And, you know, I all kind of just said, just be overprepared than underprepared.
Right.
It's just a
decision that people will point their finger at and say, oh my gosh, you were the first and what an idiot. But in reality, you ended up making the best decision and, you know, you're the one that's safe and somebody else might not be safe. So it's, you know, it is a very hard line to be at. And it's a very difficult decision to make. And I understand the financial impact, but I think there's another side that we have to do what's best for all of us.
And we did have a note come in and said, as states can mandate the closure of bars and restaurants, they can mandate the closure of dental practices. Hey, listen, if they can do it and if they decide to do it, okay, that's what, you know, that's what we'll have to deal with.
But last time I checked, Manal, you're not on a state government, and neither am I, so I can't make those decisions, and neither can you.
No, we can't make the decision, so we can't help you with that. And guys, I know that it's been almost an hour. Was there anything else, MJ, that you wanted to see? I know we have like 76 some viewers who are watching this, and I know that you guys have a lot of questions. And MJ, if they wanted to reach out to you because you are somebody who has lived it, who has a lot of information on it, what is the best way for them to do that?
So my email address is drmjhanlon@gmail.com. And then I do have a consulting Facebook page and my regular Facebook page. But if you have specific questions about the COVID virus, COVID-19, I'm going to be putting up a lot of documents on my consulting page just as references. Feel free to download them. Take as any information that you can that you find useful that might help your teams. Because
what is your, and I'm just going to put down as Dr. MJ Hanlon, right, on Facebook?
Yeah, on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm going to make sure that you guys have that. She's going to be producing a lot of different research and a lot of different stuff that's going to be helpful. And that's the thing. It's so very hard right now for us to, it's easy for us to get stuck in the media world, you know, because there are so many poppings and there's so many opinions coming up. There are so much, the media is telling us some stuff. Their friends are telling us some stuff. There's so many opinions happening. And in a world where opinions are kind of the go-to for answers, go to science. We are all healthcare professionals.
Isn't that what we do? Evidence-based dentistry. Isn't that what we do every single day? So go to the science and understand the science behind it so that you can make the right decision.
Absolutely. I have one more question, and then after that, I will let you go. But in dental launches, I have somebody asking, is taking temperature at the front desk area a HIPAA violation?
I don't believe so, because you'll see that you go in, if you have to, and I hope you don't have to go to a hospital anytime soon, but if you do have to go to a hospital, they're checking temperatures on everyone. Part of your intake exam process, so I don't believe it's a problem HIPAA-wise.
Yeah, so there we go. So if we have information like that, we'll do that. I'm just going to make sure that I put Dr. MJ Hanlon's page right on here, guys. So if you pretty much go to facebook.com and if you Google Dr. MJ, or not Facebook, Google, you know, Facebook, Dr. MJ Hanlon, you see what's happening. Search for me. I'm trying to multitask here and I'm trying to look at the comments and talk to you. But right in here, if you see it, you will see it's Mary Jane Hanlon, RDH, at DMD, MBA. So you are like hygienist, dentist, MBA, Tufts. You got everything covered. I'm so excited that you came on today, and I know that you want to talk about this. We so very much appreciate it. We are getting a lot of comments from people saying thank you, and, you know, yes, let's do evidence-based sciences, you know, things like that. So there is a lot of different comments coming in. Thank you guys for joining us. You are the best. We will go through the comments, absolutely, like I mentioned. And I'll be live every day with different people in the industry. We're going to be discussing this because I think next week's going to be the one to watch.
A big week. a big wig. Manal, I want to thank you too for allowing me to bring this message to the community, because I think it's really critically important. Having lived it the last week and a half, it's good for me to be able to share that, something that I know if it's positive for other people.
It is, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, guys. We hope you enjoyed the show.
All right. Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.